Yeah, thank you. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Whadjuk people, and talk to you about the differences between HTLV-1C from a virological perspective compared to HTLV-1A. So already a lot of the introduction has been given by both Lloyd and James, but HTLV was first described human retroviruses 2 years before HIV and sort of dropped off the radar screen, but there's a lot of people infected with this virus globally, 10 to 15 million people. Targeting the virus targets principally CD4 and CD8 T cells, but it can infect other cells, as James has mentioned. Transmission, Lloyd's also mentioned, through blood, sexual or breast milk transfers, and primarily transfers by cell-cell contact, and causes a lifelong infection that invades the host DNA. So just to hammer that home, it's not influenza or, you know, something. It's a binary event, cell-cell transfer. Seems to be the main mode of transmission. You need reverse transcription to succeed with that transmission event, and thereafter proliferation of the cells can occur. Some virus can be released from infected cells, but mostly the infection resides as a DNA integrated copy. So cellular DNA is the location for the virus as a provirus, and that's what we measure through time. So HTLV-1 is classically associated with adult T-cell leukemia, a very aggressive T-cell lymphoma or leukemia, with a short survival time, very resistant to chemotherapy, and the HTLV-associated myelopathy with influx of infected T-cells into the spinal cord, the lower spinal cord, producing paralysis in the final stages, but prior to that, bladder dysfunction, constipation, impotence. So these are the well-recognised clinical signs, but Lloyd's been through both the high prevalence in Central Australia and also the common conditions that he sees in his patients. So where did this virus come from? So HTLV, like HIV, is mostly associated with zoonotic transfer from primates. So we don't have any primates in Australia. But when we look at the different genotypes of HTLV, most of the world has a common genotype known as HTLV-1 subtype A, which derives from mostly African primates. So there's non-human primate transfers and then probably transfer in people movements to different continents, different parts of the world, notably Japan, Brazil, Middle East in Iran. But in Australia, we have the most divergent form of the virus, HTLV-1 subtype C. And quite clearly, this is derived from primates in Southeast Asia, around the Indonesian archipelago, where transfer into humans and then human migration 40, 50,000 years ago into Australia carried the virus into this continent. And there's since then been a coevolution of virus and host. Now, HTLV-1 is somewhat similar to HIV in some key points. It targets cells of the immune system, but HTLV-1 has a more diverse targeting to CD8 cells as well. Both of these infections cause a lifelong association with the virus. So binary event, once infected, infected for life. Transmission is mostly through infected cells transferring with HTLV-1. And the key difference is that HIV kills the target cells, whereas HTLV drives proliferation of infected cells, so expansion of cells due to the expression of viral products, viral proteins. So the effect on the immunity, though, is in the end it's a little bit similar. Immune deficiency in HIV from loss of CD4 T cell help, among other consequences. But in HTLV, this overactive inflammation and the effect of these viral proteins, which I'll talk about more in a moment, leads to non-functional T cells. So effective immunosuppression with what I call zombie T cells that come along for the party, they're migrating into the spinal cord, but they're not actually doing any useful immune function. Both these viruses drive chronic immune activation, all the comorbidities associated with that, and HTLV, though, has this direct tumour induction capability because of the viral proteins. So just to look at the modes of transmission and the consequences, so HIV more frequently infects by cell-free infection, requiring reverse transcription to achieve a proviral copy of DNA, whereas HTLV, that reverse transcription drives high rate of genetic variability. So there's very, very high genetic variability in HIV because every infection event is really driving reverse transcription of the cDNA, RNA into cDNA, and then integration event. Whereas HTLV-1 predominantly infects by cell-cell transmission. So there is reverse transcription, some genetic variation, but the infected T cells differ from each other. So the T cell receptor for antigen is an important component, and where the virus lands in terms of its integration site can also have an impact on the infection. And thereafter, most of the chronic infection is through cell division. So there is some transfer to newly or uninfected cells, but predominantly it's mostly clonal expansion, which is pretty high level of genetic stability for the virus. So we don't see the high rate of divergence of the proviral DNA in HTLV as we do with HIV. So the outcome is the different consequences from infection hinge back to the different cell types or different consequence of where HTLV infects in each patient. So the number of years of infection. So we get disease in much older age in HTLV, whereas HIV disease occurs in a relatively shorter period. The proviral load is important. The percentage of HTLV-infected T cells determines the rate of progression to disease, as Lloyd said. The proviral genome structure and expression, which I'll talk about in a moment. The integration site within the host and the ensuing clonal expansions are important. The antigen receptor on the HTLV T cells is also important, particularly where those antigen receptors might be responsive to other pathogens, so driving the proliferation of cells and expansion of that proviral load. And then the capacity of the patient to immune control the burden of HTLV-infected cells. So what does the virus look like? It's actually quite a complex virus. It has the familiar structural genes, the GAG, the POL, the envelope. The provirus obviously has two long terminal repeats. But what is quite different with HTLV is the very complex array of different spliced RNAs producing a series of regulatory proteins. The two that we're most familiar with are the TAX protein, which is driving proliferation of cells. And then a negative sense transcript. This is a virus that makes a reverse transcript, including this HBZ RNA and protein. So I'll focus on those quite a bit as we go forward, but flag a few others. So all of these genes are regulatory genes are coded by what's called the X region, the PX. And includes particularly the P12-P8, which drives formation of immune synapse and assists in transmission, controlling T cell receptor signaling, regulates also the level of MHC at the surface of cells, so it's important in driving immune evasion. The other proteins, the P30, I'll also flag quite a bit, which is important for viral infectivity and also driving proliferation of cells. So in chronically infected patients, we can draw out the blood cells, and this is a slide from Charles Bangham and his group, and just looking at a clone of cells and the expression of these different cellular proteins, TAX is expressed sporadically in this clone of cells. So one cell here turning on high-level expression of TAX, which has what Charles describes as a TAX burst, whereas the HBZ is expressed at a low level consistently in all cells. So it's constitutive expression of HBZ, a burst of expression of TAX, yet very low expression of the structural proteins of virus, like the GAG protein. So the consequence of that is that HBZ turns out to be the most important thing to act to drive cell proliferation. So HBZ acts to drive cell cycle progression as an RNA molecule. If protein is expressed, the HBZ protein, that also assists in driving cell progression. So that that negative sense transcript alone from that PX region is what's required for the constitutive proliferation of cells and clonal persistence of this virus. Occasionally, sporadically, events such as glucose metabolism, hypoxia, cell stress, cell activation drive that burst of TAX messenger RNA and the high-level expression of TAX protein. So these TAX bursts then promote virion production and also further drive cell cycle progression and proliferation of cells. These TAX bursts also promote a burst in HBZ expression, which suppresses the expression of TAX and sort of dampens the whole show down. So this is a way that the virus assists in persisting and also proliferating within cells. Within cells, the HTLV is capable of communicating, if you like, with long-distant oncogenes because it has this, this insulator region, this CTCF insulator within the genome, so that the negative sense transcript in particular, driving from the HBZ gene, can form bridges and long-distance activation of oncogenes that can reside as many as 10 to 5 megabases away. So this is a directly oncogenic virus with long-range activation of host oncogenes that depend on the site of integration of the virus. The other pathogenic process is associated with inflammation, inflammatory diseases that result from the presence of the virus within CD4-positive, CCR4-positive Treg type cells that then express TAX. This TAX assists in driving expression of inflammatory cytokines, pro-inflammatory cytokines like gamma interferon, that recruit bystander cells and activate them, particularly into tissues where they can then become further infected with virus and driving this, this increased pro-inflammatory milieu. And this is thought to underpin the pathogenesis of the HAM, the myelopathy. So Lloyd has been through and described the conditions that he witnesses in Central Australia. So most of these conditions are not really ATL or HAM in his clinic, but mostly bronchiectasis, strongyloides, and other bloodstream infections, as he's published and then presented most recently. So we were quite interested to see whether the HTLV1C proteins and the tropism of the virus was similar or different to HTLV1A. So receiving cell samples and serum samples from Lloyd, we're able to measure some things. So firstly, where is the virus? The virus is very clearly within predominantly CD4 cells, also highly concentrating into gamma delta CD4 cells, lower levels of entry into CD8s and monocytes. Virtually one patient had some. Not many patients here. We haven't been able to get many viable cells out of Central Australia to do these kind of analyses, but resembles what we see with HTLV1A. The CD4 subtype, it's mostly the effector memory CD4 cells, so similar to HIV, cells that are long-term resident cells within tissues harbouring immune memory. The viral load that across our first cohort of patients that we looked at is generally quite high. Lloyd flagged the 1% proviral load, and we find that both GAG and TAX in many patients exceeds 1%. Using the droplet digital PCR, and this is data that Lloyd has just presented. That 1% proviral load associates with mortality and also bronchiectasis, as he has published. So through time, what's happening with the proviral load? Well, we've had a little bit of an examination of the longitudinal proviral load. So most patients are fairly steady through time. Many of these patients in this group here are above that 1% proviral load. Some of them seem to increase through time. This is probably unreliable, these lines here, but increases in proviral load. But we also witness some decreases in proviral load. So it does bounce around in some patients, but is mostly fairly steady through time. What about the sequence of the viruses? So this is where we really saw some differences. So the structural genes in particular from sequence of 22 patients are fairly similar in their nucleotide sequence and a little more divergent within the amino acid sequences. But as we look at the regulatory genes in HTLV1C, this is where we find across the PX region the greatest degree of divergence, particularly in this P12, P8, and the HBZ and P30. So our hypothesis is that these genetic differences may result in the novel gene expression and increased inflammation and potentially the lower levels of leukemia that are seen in the clinic. So looking at the gene sequences of these patients, trying to determine full genome sequence, one thing that we did see is that many patients delete large chunks of their proviral genome. This is also recognised in HIV, but curiously, the X region is very universally retained, whereas the structural genes, particularly GAG, the protein that is the target for the serology, serological assays monitoring infection in patients, is frequently deleted. So the height of these lines here in purple show the coverage of sequence, so LTR, GAG, protease, polymerase, envelope, and then the X region. So there are subfamilies within the patients. Looking at the dendrogram tree, we find that three different subgroupings in the patients that we examined. And the greatest degree of difference and diversity was in this X region, particularly around the P12 and HBZ. The about 10% of the genomes were intact, 10 to 20%, whereas most of them were defective and deleted. So there are two selective pressures at work, a specific deletion of the structural genes for TAG, GAG, which could be driven by immune mechanisms like CTL, but it could also be genetic mechanisms seeking to delete virus like the pi RNAs. These are RNAs that seek out transposons and delete them. Retention also of the X region may drive cell proliferation and immune evasion. James has already described his model, and curiously, in a system without any functional immunity, we still see a high frequency of proviral deletions. So maybe I favour a genetic mechanism for excluding proviruses. The P12 ORF region contains a stop codon at the start. So it is fundamentally different to HTLV1A, and it produces an alternatively spliced form that makes a P16 variant of the P12. So we don't yet fully understand the functions of that, but we know that it's a fundamentally very different protein. The HBZ, the more all-important factor driving cell proliferation, I have to skip through this. When we look in the mice from James, in this case we find it an RNA produced. There's an alternatively processed form. It's not spliced, but it removes a chunk of sequence in the activation domain of the HBZ. So we've looked at that, and we've shown that in fact it doesn't induce the same effects on the viral attacks and LTR. The final protein we've looked at is P30. P30 is in HTLV1A, is essential for in vivo infectivity and promotes ATL, altering gene expression and immune responses, impedes DNA repair and alters cell cycle progression. So all the things that are associated with ATL. In HTLV1C, the P30 has amino acid mutations in each of the known functional domains listed there, and the true effect of those mutations requires further virological examination. In the remaining minus 30 seconds, just looking at antibody-mediated immunity. We've been recently able to devise a neutralising antibody assay, and screening patients, we've been able to identify that some patients have quite high levels of neutralising antibody against a reporter virus pseudotype with HTLV1 envelope, HTLV1C envelope. showing again here, so more patients. So some of them are very hot for the high levels of neutralising antibody. And what's quite exciting is that these neutralising antibodies, if we monitor the look at the level of binding against a trimer version, so an authentic structured trimer, we see that there's a correlation between neutralisation and binding to the authentic structured trimer. And again, viruses that lack envelope deletions also have the highest level of envelope antibody that's neutralising antibody that binds the trimers. Showing this again, so there's a correlation between binding the trimer and neutralisation in the neutralising assay. The exciting thing about that is that we might be able to go back to serological samples and correlate proviral load with binding to the trimer. So that's what this is showing here, is this correlation between proviral load and a serological marker, which is the binding of envelope antibodies against authentic structured trimer. So the thing that we're quite interested in now is, just to finish up, is to try and use these trimers and the understanding of which patients have broad neutralising antibodies to see whether we can fish out and make a neutralising monoclonal antibody that we can then characterise in the mouse model system with the Pellegrini and Cooney lab, and then see whether that might be useful in preventing transmission in the clinical setting. So in Australia, in our region, we've got a genetically different HCLB1, HCLB1C, prominent and prevalent in Indigenous Central Australian communities, but is also possibly out there in Australia general community as well. Same strains are present in PNG, Melanesia, but the prevalence is really unknown. High levels of defective proviruses exist in patients, but all retain that X region and the genes that are associated with HAM and ATL. But in HTLV1C, those genes are highly different to HTLV1A, and we need further virological examinations to better understand them. What's not known with HTLV1C are the pathogenic mechanisms of those altered proteins. Are they going to increase inflammatory disease, reduce leukemia induction? And we need better assays to predict the onset of inflammatory disease and leukemia as well. There's an expanded HTLV1C invasion and pathogenesis of myeloid cells potentially. We want further drugs, as Jane mentioned, vaccines and passive antibodies potentially to protect against transmission. We don't have time to talk about that, but we've got to do what we've done with HIV, but particularly get preventions, acknowledge the co-workers here, particularly Lloyd and his team, David Urich, George Curie, James Ward, who started me thinking about HTLV1, and finally, we've got the International HTLV Conference in Melbourne in 2021. Thank you.